Today's share in the Daf Yomi is the Gemara in Sukkah, Daf Lamed Dalet. We begin about five lines down from the top, Lamed Dalet of an Aleph, with the words Tan Rabbanim. We're learning today Le'ilu Nishmas Shmuel Chaim Katowitz, Shmuel Chaim Ben Levi. All the Neshamas we learned for Shev and Aliyah. So we begin Tan Rabbanim. Arvei Nachal, we already darshaned yesterday, Arvei Nachal, we said the plural usage of the word Arvei came to be Marbe. All of the different places, the way Rashi understood it, all the different places that an Arava might grow. Ideally, according to Rashi, the optimal place is by a Nachal, but all other Aravos are good as well. So, Arve Nachal, the Brisa tells us, Hagdelos ala Nachal should be the ones that are growing by a Nachal, by a river. Prat, one exception to this rule is Letzavtzafa. The Tzavtzafa type of Arava is not a kosher Arava. Hagdela ben Harim, this is growing in the mountains and is not a good Arava. We will see three characteristics of the Arava that make it kosher, and the three characteristics that the Tzavtzafa has that make it not kosher. We'll see this in a minute. So this is the first version that we have of this Braisa. And on this Braisa, we have a question. Amar Rabbi Zeir, Rabbi Zeir says, Micro, what's the Pasuk to support this Drasha? So it's a Pasuk that we actually have from Yecheskel. And it tells us, Micro, what's the Pasuk? Koch al Mayim Rabim. You should go and be like the Aravas that grow by the water. However, instead, Klal Yisrael, instead of you being a beautiful Arava, you instead are acting more like a Tzavtzafa, Tzavtzama Somo. So, in other words, the Navi is stating that Klal Yisrael didn't do the right things. So this is Reb Zeira's drasha of the pasuk. Abaye doesn't like Reb Zeira's interpretation. Only Abaye says, "V'dilma parusha kamefarish." In fact, maybe the second part of this sentence is explaining the first part. What does it mean? Koch amayim rabim. It means tzavtzama samo. V'dilma parusha kamefarish. Koch amayim rabim umayniu. And what are the aravas that are growing by the mayim rabim? It's the tzavtzafa. So therefore, the tzavtzafa is the perfect type of arava. So Gemara says, no, that can't be. In Cain, my samo. Then what does it mean? You shall be set up as a tzavtzafa. It should have just said, koch hamayim rabim tzavtzafa. The word samo ruins this type of a drasha. And the Gemara continues. Rashi says, we don't say the words Elo Omer Rabbi Avohu. Often the editors already took into account Rashi's change in the gears, so we don't even have it in our Gemara. But Rashi says it should just be a separate statement. Omer Rabbi Avohu. Rabbi Avohu said, Amar Kodesh Baruch Hu, Ani Amar Tishu Yisrael Lufanai Kekach HaMayim Rabim. I ask the Klal Yisrael should be to me like an Arava by the large amounts of water. And what exactly is this? My new Arava, this is the description of Klal Yisrael as an Arava. However, V'hein, Klal Yisrael acted inappropriately. Some Watzman Kitzatzifa Shebaharim. They acted not like the Arvei Nochal, they acted like the Tzatzifa in the mountains. So this is the first interpretation that we have. We have a second interpretation. Ikud demasi lo lahaykra masnisa. Some brought down this pasuk as a direct question on the Mishnah. So let's read it again. There's no real difference in the outcome, just who's saying what Rashi explains. So kach hamayim rabim tzavtzafa somo. The pasuk in Yecheskel says that Klal Yisrael should be like the mayim rabim, but instead they were like a tzavtzafa. So Gemara says maskil rozeira. But maybe it's not what the pasuk is meaning. Maybe v'dilma perusha kamefarish. That maybe the pasuk is describing what Klal Yisrael should be like, which is a tzavtzafa. Kach hamayim rabim, and what is that mayniu tzavtzafa? So again, the Gemara says, "In Cain, my samo." Then we don't need the word samo. And now here we introduce Rabbi Avohu's statement. Amar Rabbi Avohu. Rabbi Avohu said, "Amar Kodesh Baruch Hu." Kodesh Baruch Hu said to Klal Yisrael, "Ani Amar Tishu Yisrael Lufanai." I said to Klal Yisrael that you should act in front of me like Koch Amayim Rabim, like the Arava that's grown on the large amount of water by the river. And my new Arava, and that as the standard Arava, but instead, they made themselves like the Tzatzafa in the mountains and not doing what I asked them to do. So this is the second version. Again, the conclusion is exactly the same, just the way it's brought about is a little bit different. So now the Gemara asks, what is the difference between an Arava and a Tzatzafa? They're both technically, I guess, in the family of Aravas, so why is an Arava good and a Tzatzafa is no good? So we have a price, a ton of a button. Ezel Arava. What is the definition of an Arava? Ezel Tzavtzafa. What are the characteristics of Tzavtzafa? So we have three characteristics for an Arava and three opposite characteristics for the Tzavtzafa. The Arava has Kana Shalot Adam. It has a red stem. The Ola Shalot Moshuch. And it has elongated oval leaves. And Upia Cholach. And it has smooth leaves. They don't have serrations in the leaves. And if you have any difficulty seeing this, so you can look in the Pirush Chai on page 107, diagram number 538. Again, I think it's pretty straightforward. There's also diagrams in the Illustrated Gemara, as well as some of the new Masiftas also have diagrams. I should have mentioned that as well. I have the old Masifta, and it doesn't have so many diagrams. And the art scroll here doesn't have any diagrams either. In any event, I think it's pretty straightforward for the word. So these are the three characteristics of the Arava. Number one, has a red stem. Number two, its leaves are elongated, oval. And number three, it doesn't have serrations on the leaves. As opposed to, the tzavtzafa is the exact opposite for all three characteristics. Koner shalah lovin has a white stem. For olo shalah, and its leaves are ogol, or round, not oval or elongated. Upia domo amagol, and the leaves themselves are serrated like a scythe. So therefore, the tzavtzafa doesn't meet the criteria that we need to use it. Warren says, wait a second, we have another brisa that seems to disagree. Hotanya, domil amagol kosher. Another brisa says, if it's like the scythe or the sickle, at the serrations, it's kosher. Only if it's domil amasar is a puzzle. Only if it's like a saw, then it's no good. The difference between a magol and a saw is the direction of the serrations. I give the example, I'm in Eretz Yisrael right now, so they have all over the place, you know, your tires are going to be pierced if you go out this way, dukranim, you have the piercings of the tire, but if you go in that way, you'll pierce the tire, so if you go out that way, since all the dukranim, all the pointy things are all pointing in the same direction, your wheels go right over them. So that would be all the pointy parts, all the serrations are all going in the same direction, and if you run your hand across it in that way, it will be nice and smooth. It's only if you go in the other direction that it will be serrated. As opposed to, a saw has serrations that are on both sides. And again, you can see this in the diagram on page 108 in the Pirush Chai. Diagram number 540, where he shows you the saw, and then he shows you the leaves. And you see that it comes up to a point, and it has both a Echad Mikan and Echad Mikan type of an approach, as opposed to they're all going in one direction. But in any event, there's a steer over here. We said that if the leaves are serrated, it's no good, even if it's serrated all in one direction. And this brisa seems to say that if it's domel amagol, it's kosher. So what's going on? So I'm Abaye. Abaye says, Kitanya hi bechilfo gila, that this is one exception to the rule of having serrations, and that is the arova known as the chilfo gila. Rashi points out that this is the only type of a kosher arova that has these serrated edges. All the other types of aravas that are kosher, all of them have piocholot, they have smooth edges of their leaves, no serrations. Based upon this, Omer Abaye says, Shema Minoa, you can see from here that Hai Chilfo Gila kosher liyoshana, since it tells us this price that there's a certain type of leaf that is domel amagol that is kosher, so that is this Chilfo Gila, and it is perfectly good for the arava, for the hoshana. Gemara says, Pshita, obviously, we just said it's good. Gemara says, no, Ma'ad the Tema, I might have thought that since it has a Shem Levi, we mentioned many times, when the Torah tells us something is good, and it doesn't tell us it has an adjective attached to the name, so then only the thing without the adjective is good. So, obviously, Shem Levi, it's called the Chilfa Gila. It's from a place known as Gila. So the Chilfa, which means Arava, as we'll see in a moment, and if it comes from Gila, so then it is kosher. So I might have thought, Mount Tema, holy Isli Shem Levi, Lon is kosher, that it wouldn't be good, Kamash Malon, that it is good. That's the Chiddush of Abaye. No, the Gemara says, Ve'im Hochanami. Maybe, in fact, it shouldn't be good because it has a Shem Levi. Again, the Gemara gives us the answer we gave previously. The Pasuk tells us, Arve Nocho, which Rashi understood to mean the plural. Arve, Amar Achman, Ami Kol Mokom. The Torah is telling us that Aravos that have these characteristics are good in any place. Almost all the Aravos have all three characteristics, a red stem, elongated flowers or leaves, and the serrations are not present except in the Chilfa Gila. Gemara continues and says, Amar Chista, Hani Tlas Nile, there are three words that have changed their definition to Pum Tvaker, the opposite. Ishtani Shemayu, Miki Chora Beis HaMikdash. Before the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, there was one word that was being used, and after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, it was the exact opposite that was being used. The definitions changed, the words, the nouns changed. The first one of the three that Rechis is going to tell us is chalafta, which is the chilfa, and the word arafta. They switched around. That before the Beis HaMikdash, it used to be called chilfa or chalafta, and now, after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, it's called arava. And what was previously known as arava before the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed is not called, is now called chalafta. So prior to the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, we used the terminology arava. And after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, the same exact plant known as the arava before the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed is now called the chalafta or the chilfa. Now, what's the practical
ramifications of this, my nafkamina. So the answer is lulav. So before the Beis HaMikdash, we had something known as an arava, so that it was perfectly good. But after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, if you have something known as an arava, now it is called chilfa, and it wouldn't be good if it was called arava. That's the first one of the three things Rav Chisda said. Shipura chatzotzarta. You have a shofar that's shipura, and a chatzotzos, a trumpet. So before the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, it was known as a shofar, and after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, the same shofar became known as a chatzotzros, and vice versa. Before the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, chatzotzrosa was called a trumpet, and after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, it's known as a shipura, a shofar. And again, my nafkamina, what's the practical ramifications of this change in the name from shofar to chatzotzros? So where it says, the shofar shal Rosh Hashanah, what is a good shofar shal Rosh Hashanah? So before the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, they used to call a good shofar a shofar. But after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, the shofar is actually no good. And the chatzotzros are now what we used to previously call a shofar, a kosher shofar. And the third and final thing that Rosh Hashanah said is pesorta, pesora. There's a little table, pesorta. It's like adding on the word chanala. You add on a word yankala. So you add on the word sa to imply a smaller, something that's dear to you. Pesorta is the word that was used for a certain type of table. And then there was the regular table known as a pesora. That was before the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. But after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, what previously was a pesorta is now called pesora, and what's previously called pesora is now called pesorta. Again, l'may nafkamina, who cares? Why is this important for the Gemara to teach this to us? So here, we don't have a mitzvah associated with a small table or a larger table, but the nafkamina would be l'mecha chomemcha. If somebody called up his friend and said, listen, I want to buy a pesorta, so if it was before the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, he'd expect to get a small table. And he can't complain afterwards, it's l'mecha chotos. But it's after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, he said he wants a pesorta, so then he expects to get a larger table. Amar Baye says there are additional ones that change the nouns other than the three that Rav Chisda said. I'll show you a fourth one. Afani Omer, I myself have another example of this. And these are the two different parts of the four chambers of the stomach of a ruminating animal. So the four different stomachs we know in a ruminating animal. We had this in the Gemara and Chulin in great detail. We're not going to go through it right now. But in the Laze Rashi, they explained that the first one is referring to the keva, which is the third of the four stomachs of a ruminating animal, and the next one is known as the pansa, and that is the keres, which originally was the first of the maligera. So what was originally the first of the four stomachs was known as bekase, and what was originally the third of the four stomachs was known as huvlila. And then, after the things were destroyed, these nouns got switched around. So now, huvlila was the first one, and bekase was the third one. And again, l'may nafkamina, why do we care? What's the importance of knowing these names? So here, the nafkamina is l'machad hanimtza ba'ovi be'sakosus. If you have a needle that goes only partially through one side of the four stomachs, so it depends which stomach it goes through. If it's the thicker stomach, which would be the third stomach, that's very thick. And if you have a needle that penetrated only partially through, it didn't go through and through, so that will seal off and it won't cause the animal to be a trefa. But it's in the first part of the stomach, which isn't as thick, so then if you have a needle that penetrates even one side, the stomach went out the other side as well. So the names of these are very important. When a person comes and presents the case to a Rav and he says it was in the Beikatsi or it was in the Uvlila, so obviously it makes a huge difference, halach lamaisa, whether it was in the first part of the stomach or it was in the third part of the stomach. And finally, we have one more. Amar Rava Bar Yosef. Rava Bar Yosef said, I have another one, a fifth one, Afani Omer, that Bavel was originally referred to as Barvel, but after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, it became known as Borsif. And likewise, Borsif, which is a place near Bavel, after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, that was the word that they used to describe Bavel. And Gemara again says, L'may Nafkamina, what's the purpose of this? If we turn to Lamed Dalet Omer Beis, why do we care about this? Again, is there any significance to this change of the name? The Gemara is not a dictionary. The Gemara says, yeah, legite noshim. This is very important in terms of gite noshim. Rashi reminds us of the din and gitin that when you bring a get, may chutz la'aretz to Eretz Yisrael, and if you get me binas hayam, so then, since the people in general in Eretz Yisrael are baki in the laws of gitin, and there are always people that can verify the witnesses because everybody comes up to Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, we can verify the authenticity of the witnesses. So therefore, you don't have to say, when you're bringing a get in Eretz Yisrael from another place in Eretz Yisrael, you don't have to say the magic words, L'fanei nechtam, b'fanei nechtam. It was written in front of me, and it was signed in front of me. But when you're bringing it from a place outside of Eretz Yisrael where the people were not bakiyim in the halachos of Gittin, and you're not going to necessarily have people that are going to be able to authenticate and recognize the signatures because those people don't come up to Eretz Yisrael regularly, so therefore the person bringing the get has to say, yes, it was written in front of me and it was signed in front of me, and I attest to the authenticity of this get. Now, what about Bavel? So Bavel proper was made up of Tamidei Chachamim that often went to Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, in Bavel proper, you also didn't have to say Bifonei Nechtav, Bifonei Nechtam. It would be adequate to just bring it. Now, Bavel was the name that they called this place where the people with Tamidei Chachamim and traveled to Eretz Yisrael before the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. After the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, they changed the name of Bavel and they called it Bursif, and vice versa. What was previously Bursif, which Rashi tells us, was a place known as Bor Sheshofu Esmeimav, Velonishtai Boklum. It was like a pit that emptied out all of its important water and nothing was left in it. In other words, the people there were not Tamidei Chachamim, they were not Bnei Torah, Rashi says, and therefore Bursif is now referred to, after the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, is Bavel. So this din, that from Bavel, you don't have to say Bifonei Nechtav was only pre-Beis HaMikdash. After the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, then it was only from Bursif, which was now what they called Bavel. And the previously place of Amaratza known as Bursif was now known as Bavel. They did have to say Bifonei Nechtav, Bifonei Nechtav. Now we begin the next Mishnah. Rabbi Shmuel tells us that there are shlosho hadasim. A person has to take three hadasim. We'll see he retracts this in a moment. But he says we have to take three hadasim. Even though he retracts it, we paskin like this. Many people have the custom of taking three hadasim, albeit if you just have one kasher hadas, you are going to be yotzi b'diyavet. But we do follow this custom that Rabbi Shmuel himself says we don't need to do, because we'll see that Rabbi Tarfon also says you take three hadasim. Rabbi Shmuel says that you take three hadasim. You take shtei aravos, the lulav with the binding of the lulav, the Esrog, Hadassim, and the Arava all together. Again, only three of them are actually bound together. We hold the Esrog in the left hand and bring it near the other three species, so we bind, even though it may only be a mitzvah, not everybody agrees that Tzarich Eged, like Rabbi Yehuda says, but it is at least a mitzvah to bind them in the Keshula that I said that we use, that many people have the Lulav in the middle of this Keshula, and then you have the Hadassim to the right and the Aravos to the left. So this Keshula binds them all together. So you have three hadasim, and you have two aravos, and you have lulav echad, just one lulav, and esrog echad, and one esrog. That's the opinion of Rabbi Shmuel. But then he adds, afilu shnayim ketumim, even if two of the hadasim have their top of their hados clipped off, and echad eino ketumim, and only one of them is not clipped off, it still is a kashera hados. Now, if, again, the Gemara is going to say, if he says you need three, so how does it help us that you only have one? So the Gemara is going to say he retracts his position, and he now took the position that you only need one. In any event, the Mishnah continues and says, Rabbi Tarfon Omer, afilu shloshton ketumim. Rabbi Tarfon says you need three, but he says they can all be clipped off, and that they're still kosher, even though the top part is clipped off. Rabbi Kiva Omer, kishem shelulav echad, the esrog echad, just like you only have to take one lulav, one esrog, so too, the din is, kachados echad, v'arava achas. All you do have to take is one hados and one arava. Gemara will now discuss this machlokas. Gemara starts off by quoting a braisa, Tanya. We learned in the following braisa, Rabbi Shmuel Omer, pre-Eitz Hadar. When it tells us about the Esrog, it says pre-Eitz Hadar, and Echad, you only bring one pre-Eitz Hadar. When it says kapos tmarim, when it says kapos, it's spelled without a vav, but it's pronounced kapos, so also, he says you only need to bring one lulav. When it says anaf eitz avos, that has to be bringing three hadasim, and arvinocho, since it's plural, you have to bring two aravos. This is the opinion of Rabbi Shmuel, which exactly corresponds to the opinion of our Mishnah. But then it says in the Brice as well, that Rabbi Shmuel adds, vafilu shnayim ketumim, the echot she'eno kotum, even if two of them are clipped off at the top, and one of them is not clipped off, it's still kosher. That is acceptable b'diyevet. Rabbi Tarfon Omer, shlosha, he says here that you specifically need three. In the Mishnah, he didn't specifically state that he needed three. He alluded to it, but he didn't specifically state it. Afilu shloshtan kitum, and all of them could be cut off. According to Rabbi Tarfon, you need three, but they don't have to be perfect. They don't have to be, as we'll see, tama. They can even be clipped off. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Kishem Shelulav Echav Yesug Echad. The same like in the Mishnah, Rabbi Akiva says that just like there's only one Lulav and only one Esrog, so too, you only need Ka'ach Hados Echad Yarova Achas. You only need to take one Hados and one Arova. Now, that was Rabbi Akiva Shita in the Mishnah, and we had the Braisa. But here we add on, and we have Omer lo Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer seems to say to Rabbi Akiva, that's the Girsa that we have, Yochel ye esrog imohen ba'aguda achas. You might have thought that the esrog has to be bound with the other three species, the lulav, the hadas, and the aravos. So Amris, so the Gemara tells us, that's not necessary. Is there a vav after a pre-eitz hadar? No, it says pre-eitz hadar, and then it just says kaposhtorm. There is no vav hamachaber. There's no vav hachibor. And therefore, the vav doesn't connect the esrog to the other three. And therefore, the kaposhtorm is not what it says. It just says halo lo nemar ela kaposhtorm. So therefore, it's not connected to the esrog, and therefore, Rabbi Eliezer tells Rabbi Akiva that you don't need to go and connect the esrog to the other three, albeit the minhag is that you hold them together. Uminayin Shem Akhman says that. By the way, he continues and says, how do you know that if you only have three of the species that you're not yotzei the mitzvah? Because Talmud Lomar, the post says, ulekachtem, you have to take all of them. Shetehei lekicha tama. It has to be a perfect taking it, a tam taking it, a complete taking it. And here, there is no completeness if you only have three of the four species. Now, this was the girsa that we have. However, the Korban Nisanel on the Rush is surprised by this Amar Lo Rabbi Eliezer. He says, what in the world is Rabbi Eliezer talking to Rabbi Akiva about this? His statement seems to have nothing to do with what Rabbi Akiva said. And therefore, he brings down the girsa from the Riff and the Rush that it's a separate statement. Amar Rabbi Eliezer, you might have thought they all should be bound together, but they don't have to. And it's nothing to do with Rabbi Akiva. On the other hand, there are those that justify the shita that we have, that the girsa that we have that says Omalo Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer says bidavka to Rabbi Akiva, and why is that justified? So the Oril Choner brings down Rabbi Eliezer Omal Rabbi Akiva lidvorecha shehukshu arba haminim zel zeh. Since you said just like you only have one lulav and one esrog, you made a comparison the lulav and esrog to the hodos and the arava. So therefore, Rabbi Eliezer says to Rabbi Akiva, according to the Oruch Lener, therefore, l'dvarech, according to your words, so that if you make this hekesh between them, so then how come the esrog doesn't get bound within them? And therefore, it is appropriate that Rabbi Eliezer says this to Rabbi Akiva and gives his answer. Now the Gemara goes and questions the statement of Rabbi Shmuel that I alluded to before, which we'll see that he retracted. Rabbi Shmuel, Manashach. According to Rabbi Shmuel, it doesn't work out either way. Ish leimim boy, if he says you need three complete Hadassim, so the boy namikulu. So then, if you require three hadassim, so then there should be three complete hadassim. Ilo boy shlem, if you don't require a complete one, so then afilu chad nami. Then why do you even need one? Either should be all or none. What's the idea that you said that one is good and you don't need all three to be good? Just one has to be at least good. Shmuel says, Omad Bibra, Rashi says Bibra is the name of Talmud Chacham. It's not a very commonly mentioned Talmud Chacham in Shas, but anyway, it's a great Talmud Chacham. Omad Bibra, Omad Ravami, Bibra said the name of Ravami. Rabbi Shmuel retracted his opinion. He originally said that you needed three hadassim, but afterwards he said, as long as you have one entire hadass, so then you're okay. How do we paskin? Omad Yehuda, Omad Shmuel, Rabbi Yehuda said the name of Shmuel. We paskin like this opinion of Rabbi Tarfo that actually you don't need any of them to be tama, that as long as you have three, that's his lechatridle, that you should have three. Even if they're clipped off, they're perfectly good. You don't need to have perfect hadassim. Halacha ki Rabbi Tarfo. That's what Rabbi Yehuda Shmuel said. And in fact, also Shmuel Tamei, we find that Shmuel, in ruling like Rabbi Tarfo, is consistent with his opinion that he said elsewhere. Where did he say elsewhere? Because Shmuel was very interested in making sure that people didn't raise the prices. This is what we always want the, quote, rabbis to do. That we want the rabbis to control the prices. We want the rabbis to say if people are selling kosher or Pesach food at ridiculous prices, so the rabbis should come out and say that you shouldn't buy it from them, and that they're coolers that you can take advantage of. So that's exactly what happened over here. Shmuel told all the sellers of the hadassim, the amalu Shmuel lahanu demezavne osa. Shmuel told the people who are selling hadassim, listen, Ashvu, if you make the prices appropriate, you make them normal, you level them out, the Zabinu, and then you sell them for a normal price, I won't tell people that we passing like Rabbi Tarfon. And therefore, they'll look for three complete hadassim, like ideally it should have. But below, if you're selling them for extraordinary amounts, if you're selling them for exorbitant prices, so then I'm going to tell the whole world, Durish no luchu to Rabbi Tarfon. I'm going to tell everybody that you don't need ones that are complete, you can even buy ones that are clipped off. And he did this, my time of why? Because Ilema Mishum de Mekel, if you're going to tell me, he said I pass like the Mekel opinion over here, which is Rabbi Tarfon, but guess what? Rabbi Tarfon is not the most Mekel opinion. Rabbi Akiva, the make would fight. Rabbi Akiva says you only need one. So if you really wanted to say, oh, if you don't sell it for a good price, I'm going to say take a lenient opinion. There's an even more lenient opinion. So Gemara says, no, that's not correct. Rabbi Tarfon's opinion was that you could take three that are cut off, that are clipped off, and that's not a problem. But Rabbi Akiva says you need one, chad, however, for lo kotum, it can't be cut off, and that is lo shliach. It's actually more difficult to find one that is perfect than it is to find three that aren't so perfect. Now, I should point out that there seems to be a contradiction between what we're saying here, clipped off is good, and what we said previously, niktam is no good. So what's going on? So the simplest answer, there are a number of different answers given by the Mefarshim. The simplest answer is it depends what is being clipped off here. The simplest answer is that here we're dealing with that the side branches of the hadas are clipped off. And while it's not perfect, that is not as essential. As opposed to the top, that would be essential and that would be no good. Now go to the next Mishnah, which talk about the halachos of an esrog. Again, this is the fourth in this series of Mishnahis, each one dealing with the specifics and the peculiarities that are appropriate for that particular one of the dalet minim, and that's why they're not lumped all together like we saw in Rashi yesterday. So esrog, hagazul, vayayovesh, same as the other three minim. The fourth min, the esrog, is the same rule. That if it's a stolen esrog or it's a dried out esrog, it's pasul. It's no good for all the reasons that we brought down previously. Either it's a mitzvah b'aveira, it's not lakachtem lochem, it's not yours, or it's not a question of hador, or it's not even an esrog, because it's yovish, it's dried out, doesn't have the shame of an esrog. In any event, this we discussed previously, we're not going to have more of a discussion about it now. Likewise, shel asherit shelivei dachas, if it was worshipped as an actual avodah zarah, came from an asherit tree, or it was from an irini dachas, and both of these are required to be burned, they require sreifa. So then, we say, ketuse michsa shira, it doesn't have the right shear, and there's a certain shear that we'll learn today that the esrog has to have, so it won't have the right shear. Then the Mishnah continues that here's specific to esrog because it's the only one that's a fruit. The other three are not normally eaten. So, shel arla, if you have an esrog that is from arla, arla is a fruit that is in the first 3 years, it's also bahana, you're not allowed to eat it, and the Gemara will explain why it's possible over here to use such an esrog that's an arla esrog in the first 3 years that it's arla. Likewise, shel truma tumeya pasul, you can't use truma that is tumeya for your esrog. So if the esrog was kosher, you can use it by the evidence, we'll see. But if it's tumeya, then you can't use it to be outside the mitzvah of esrog. However, shel truma tahora, if it was tahora this esrog, albeit it was truma, so then lo yitol lechatzila, you shouldn't use it. However, if you're not kosher, but if you did use it, you'd be okay by the evidence. And the Gemara will explain these three things: why arla is no good, why truma tumeya is no good, and why truma tahora is only good by the evidence but not lechatzila. Then we have Shel Dumai. Dumai is Duma. We're not sure whether Tumas and Mises were taken from it. This was a time period when Amaratzim were suspect of not taking off the full Tumas and Mises, and therefore the majority did take it off, but there's always a minority that didn't, and therefore the rabbis instituted that when you purchase produce from an Amaratz, you have to go and retake Tumas and Mises. So, in this situation, if you have Dumai Esrog, so what's its status? We'll understand why this is. We have this in a number of other places in Shas. But Beis Shammai is posel. Beis Shammai says that this Esrog Shel Dumai is no good. Beis Hillel Machshir and Beis Hillel says that it's good. Again, the Gemara will explain all of this. We've had this same discussion in many other places. And then it tells us, Shel Ma'aser Sheni B'Yerushalayim, if you have an Esrog that's Ma'aser Sheni, and it was brought to Yerushalayim, so technically it could be eaten in Yerushalayim, so L'chatzkila, you shouldn't take it. Lo Yito, but B'di'evit, if not Tal Koshi, it would be good B'di'evit. And again, the Gemara will explain why this is so. The Mishnah continues, says, also, chazazis al rubo, if you have. Rashi says, chazazis, or kimin abu abos dakos, the little pustules, little blemishes that are on the esrog, small little pustules, boils. So you shouldn't use such if an esrog if it's on the majority of it. Or nitlo maso, if the pitim, right? We know all the, everybody knows what the pitim is. It's the top part of the esrog. The diagrams, of course, in all the expected places, including the art scroll, right next to footnote number 33 and the Pirush Chai and in the Illustrated Gemara. What exactly are the different parts of the esrog? So if the chazazas are in the majority of it, or if the pitim is removed, now this is assuming, of course, it has a pitim. There are many esrogim that don't have a pitim, and therefore those are perfectly kosher. But if it had a pitim and it was removed, then it's going to be no good. And likewise, niklaf, klifa, is a peel. So the esrog was peeled. You can see what depth we're talking about in terms of peeling. A very nice diagram in the Pirush Chai, page 109, diagram number 547. And you have diagrams as well in the Illustrated Gemara. So if it was peeled, or it was nistak, it was split. You can see what nistak means in diagram page 110 in the Pirush Chai diagram number 548. So nikuv could be with a chaser kolshu, it's missing a small little piece. You can have a nekev, a piercing that doesn't have anything missing from it, and then you can have a nekev where something is missing from it. So if it was a piercing, but chaser kolshu, something is missing, in all of these cases of niklaf, nistak, or nikev, a chaser kolshu, it's also no good puzzle. But also chazos is al yuto. If you only have a small part of the esrog that has these chazoses, these pustules or boils on it, or nital uktso, the ukets is the part that's actually attached to the tree. And if that is removed, what we would call the stem, if that is removed, that doesn't pass the esrog. Or nike below chaser koshu, if you had a puncture but nothing was missing, again, you can see the difference between something missing and something not missing in diagram 548 in the Pirush Chai on page 110. So then in this situation, for all three of these, kosher, it's a perfectly good esrog still. Then the Mishnah tells us, esrog ha-kushi, a black esrog. Kushi means an esrog that comes from Ethiopia, according to Rashi. Shabbat Meir, it's kush, v'shachar hu, and it's a blackened esrog, it's a much darker esrog, so this is also no good. So esrog ha-kushi is possible, because it's strange and unusual, it's not hadar. Vayarok kikarsi, but if you have a green-colored esrog, which is green like a leek, so then that's a machlokas. Rimei is machshir, and Rehudu is poso. Rimei says, no, that's normal, because it's going to turn yellow after a while, so therefore it's considered normal. And Rehudu says, no, it's not good. Finally, the Mishnah says, what are the different sizes of an esrog? So the first opinion is, shir esrog hakotan, the smallest size of a kosher esrog, is Rameh's opinion, Rameh Omer Egos, that as long as the size of a walnut, that is a kosher esrog. He says that's a fully mature esrog, albeit it's very small. Rehudu says, no, it must be larger. Omer Kebetza, if you don't have an esrog the size of a Kebetza, even though it looks like it's fully developed, it's not. And Ubegado, how large can an esrog be? Is there a maximum size? This was the minimal size, either like a walnut or a beitza. But is there a maximum size for an esrog? So yeah, the girsa that we have is Kadesh Yochaz Shnayim Biyodo, and others have the girsa Shnayim Biyodo Achas. The shear for the largest esrog is that you can put two of them in one hand. And we had this previously, if you remind yourselves of the Gemara we had the other day, that we were talking about if a person has the lulav and esrog in the wrong hands. He has the lulav, the hadas, and the rovas in his left hand, and he has the esrog in his right hand, so he has to switch them. So he has to be able to hold the two of them, which the lulav, hadas, and the rovas is the equivalent of one esrog, and the esrog is the second esrog, so to say, equivalent in terms of size. So the opinion of the first maximal shear in the Mishnah is the gadol, the largest has to be, Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, kidesh yochas shnayim biyado achas. You have to be able to hold two of them in one hand. That's the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yossi disagrees. Rabbi Yossi says, Rabbi Yossi omer afilu echad b'shtei yado. You can even hold one esrog. Now, some of the gears are b'shneim in both of your hands. Either way, you can have a huge esrog. He doesn't hold from the concern that Rabbi Yehuda had, and therefore he says that you can use even a very, very large esrog that you need to hold with two hands. That's how big this esrog is. We turn to Lamed Hey Omen Aleph. We'll just start a little bit of the Gemara because it's relatively short shear. Gemara starts, Tana Rabban, we learn the following braisa. The Pasuk tells us, Pre-Eitz Hadar, which means that it's a pre. Now, the word eitz was unnecessary. It could have just said pre-hadar, but it says pre-eitz hadar. So it teaches us eitz shetam eitzo upir yoshova. This teaches us that the wood and the fruit have the same taste, and therefore, the only fruit that we know that the wood and the fruit has the same taste, that's an esrog. Heavy omer is an esrog. That's what the braisa tells us. More questions is, and says, who says it's only an esrog? The emor pilpurin, maybe it's talking about jalapeno peppers, it's talking about some sort of a pepper, not green peppers or red peppers, but it's talking about some sort of a spicy pepper. And there, the wood is the same taste as the fruit also. Where do we know this? Kid Tanya. Rebeya said, when it tells us in the Pasuk that if you plant the tree, so its fruit is going to be forbidden for the first 3 years as Arla. So obviously if they're fruits, it must be an Eitz Machol. Don't I know that it's dealing with an Eitz Machol? Of course it is. So therefore, why did the Torah tell me, Matam Lomer Eitz Machol? It didn't have to tell me that. It could have just said, Unetatim Kol Eitz. Why did it say Kol Eitz Machol? So therefore, the words Eitz Machol are coming to teach me, Eitz Shetamo, Eitz Opir Yoshavet, that the wood and the fruit have the same taste. And what is that? Heavy Omer, it's a pilpulin. This is talking about these various types of peppers. So look where it says, Lamed Chosha Pilpulin Chayav Merlu. So therefore, it would seem from here that pilpulin are in fact chayav biarva, and maybe that's what an esrog is. Then Eretz Yisrael chaser klum, and furthermore, Eretz Yisrael is not lacking anything, as the rest of the pasuk says, "Shneimar lo sechser kol bal," that nothing is missing from Eretz Yisrael.
Right? We just read this in last week's parsha. So therefore, lo sesar kol bo. Nothing is missing. So, but maybe it's telling us over here not to take an esrog, we should take a pepper. So we said, no. Hasa mishum de lo efshir. It's impossible. How are you going to tell me to take a pepper? Pepper's a little small, little things. Hey, shenavid, what are you going to do? Nikdot hoda, you take one little pepper? That's crazy. Minkura likihasa. We need to be able to see that you're taking it, and this little pepper is going to be totally enveloped in your hand, and nobody's going to see that you have a little pepper in your hand. Aye, so take two or three or four. Ninko trei otlo, so take two or three. So one says, no, pre-eitz echad amar rachmona v'lushnayim u'shlosha peros. You have to go and take pre-eitz hadar, meaning pre-echad, only one fruit you take, the Torah tells us, and not two or three. And therefore, it can't be talking about peppers, hilkach lo efshir. And therefore, the only tree that has the fruit and the wood tasting the same is the esrog tree. The pepper was a nice try, but no cigar. With that, we conclude today's share.